Hey. Hi everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Universal Narratives podcast. As we continue to explore the theme of educational development today in countries around the world, I found it necessary to interview a school teacher from Egypt, since our country of focus is Egypt. Today I have the pleasure of speaking with Dina Higazi, who does not only teach elementary school in Cairo, but also wears so many hats. Some of them are related to education and some are not. I will let Dina today tell us more about all these different hats, as I'm very excited to hear about all the great work that she does in Cairo. Welcome to our podcast, Dina.
Hi, Selma. Thank you very much for having me.
So Dina, as I said, you're not only an educator, but you also do so many other amazing things in Egypt. And I would like you to tell us a little bit about your background, your experience, what you're doing right now, and what are all these different activities that you participate in? I know you're a part of different groups and you also started different initiatives in Egypt. So just give us an idea about what you're doing right now in Egypt.
Okay, that's a. I hope I get to on time to answer that. Well, first of all, I'm Dina, and I'm an Egyptian educator. Teaching is my full-time job. I grew up as a full-time athlete, swimming in specific to be precise. And surprisingly, my journey growing up really dictated who I am today as an educator, and it continues to for, I'm sure, future years to come. As I've said, I've been in the field of education for 9 years, ever since I've graduated from the university, and I've received my bachelor's degree in fine arts from the States originally. However, I've been an Egyptian student in an Egyptian school all through my K-12 years. Going to the US, I went to the US for the sole purpose of my aspiration to become an Olympian swimmer. An Olympic swimmer, excuse me, and I didn't make it to the Olympics, but I was on a full ride in a Division I school in the States. And again, that really dictated who I am, the diligence that was expected, the perseverance, the resilience. It just kind of built this personality and character that I couldn't have seen it happening otherwise. And I learned, as I said, I majored in fine arts, and this is actually going to intertwine into who I will talk about in just a few seconds. Upon my return from the States, education found me. It was kind of the path was lit up, and it's like luring me in. You are a teacher, follow the light, right? And I jumped in elementary as a grade 4 homeroom teacher, and literally, it was a blessing. It has been a blessing ever since. I started off my career in education as a homeroom teacher, teaching language arts and social studies in an American school in Cairo. And I was blessed that this school is the only school that provides inclusion in Egypt. And as much as it sounds like a very sad thing that it's the only school in Egypt, yet at least there is a school in Egypt that provides inclusion. And when I say inclusion, it's not inclusion in just a specific sector of students with learning disabilities. No, it's students on the spectrum, neurodiversity all through the spectrum.
Okay.
And this in specific kind of really showed me a different angle to teaching that I never knew existed, especially after I had moved to another school. I just realized the blessings that personally I am in. And also, it showed me so many areas of development that are needed in Egypt and in our education system altogether. My years in sports and in arts has really influenced me greatly, where I feel like the way that students are brought up in Egypt, there's a fine line between kind of being too strict or too laid back, where the family orientation is either being like you're labeled as a very strict mom or a very lenient mom or a dad and so on and so forth. So this fine line of in the gray area where parents would know what they're supposed to do at the right timing. I've always felt that regardless of whatever we do as teachers is always seen as something that is she's too strict or she's too lenient. There isn't this fine line where parents are aware of when a teacher is needs to be strict and when a teacher needs to be kind of lenient. And the reason why I'm connecting this with sports is because it's part of my personality. Like, my teacher's identity is an athlete deep inside who swam for 4 or 5 hours a day alongside with being a student through school and through college. And then comes art. And art, to me, I'm a ceramic emphasis. And that's all about creation and exploration and being a very visual learner and being a very kinesthetic learner. And to be honest, going into fine arts was because I'm not the student who learns that much through text. I'm not saying that I can't learn that way, but it's not my preferable way of learning. And I always like lost track of time when I was in the ceramic studio learning about art history and then and really applying all the theories and all the philosophies into my artwork. That was my drive, right? That was my ambition. And then when I went back to, when I started teaching, being the teacher, I noticed the students who always felt like this is not the place for them, you know, and they felt like I don't want to hold the textbook. I'm not saying that one thing cancels the other, not at all. However, I sincerely try to put myself in these students' shoes because I was that kid. And as I said, teaching chose me. I'm saying it bluntly. I love it. So I've always tried to narrow down the gap between students who found it so difficult to go through the rigorous means of learning, like I'm bored or I'm tired or I don't want to grab a book and read. And also, Egypt is not a culture where reading is brought into the student's DNA at an early year, like sports, for example. No, not at all. Like by the time kids are in middle school, you start teaching them that reading is supposed to be a daily thing. It's not like the Western world where kids grow up seeing books, having libraries in their bedrooms in different languages and so on. So so pretty much I try to bring in so many things. And recently, after COVID hit, and I know also this is going to sound a bit unpleasant, but I personally have been blessed with how I've developed myself personally based on the redirection that COVID had made me personally. It just made me look at a different angle at just handling education altogether. And here's what I've been doing recently, and it's the area of ed tech, education technology. Also being in the States and working in ceramics in specific, back in the day and in the WID workshop and all that, I saw so many tools and I saw so many technology and I was really kind of bewildered with how amazing these things are and I want to use them. So when I started noticing that I can connect the use of technology and graphic design and going into a bit of instructional design and bringing it back in, and with the burst of apps that just kind of started flooding in all the teachers' faces over the past year and a half, I felt like I'm literate in this area and I can give back to the community in this area and not just depend on the free webinars that are given globally, because most of them are in English. And unfortunately, we have a very big population of Arabic teachers in Egypt who are not literate in English, and therefore they're missing out on a huge chance of learning new technological tools to be able to be digitally literate in these areas, especially that pretty much, I mean, you know, look at life in a couple of years, the money-making businesses are going to be ed tech companies more than anything else, right? Because everybody found the supply and the demand and it's just going to start gushing. So what I've been trying to do over the past year and a half was to develop some sort of a profile personally to become more of an edtech consultant. And when I say edtech consultant, I mean like really some sort of a teacher training other teachers in Arabic. I started in my old school doing some tutorials in Arabic, starting off with the free applications that the school provides, for example, like Google Forms, all the Google Suite, Microsoft Teams, anything that we need to depend on, especially with the learning management system where all of a sudden the kids are at home mm-hmm. and the communication between the teachers and the parents and everybody is just cut. And not everybody knows their way around the LMSs. And then when I moved into a new school, I was able to start building up the idea of how we can really utilize technology as a facilitator, not as a main thing, because technology, if it's not used with purpose, it's wasted. You know what I mean? It's not a matter of like using this very trendy app if you're not getting the result that you're aiming for that meets your objective. So recently what I've done is that I created a Facebook group. It's called Education Technology in Egypt. And the sole purpose of this group, it's more of a forum where all educators can share their ideas and any questions or inquiries about education technology. And I've informed everyone, please write your posts in English and Arabic, because we're trying really to reach as many teachers as we can from all different grade levels, from all schools across Egypt that are public and that are private schools. So I hope that this could be a start to great things, or hopefully I would have greater influence to educate more educators and to be of help to many other people around Egypt and hopefully the Middle East and around the world, God knows. So yeah, that's pretty much it.
It's great. I love how you discussed how that pandemic kind of like positively impacted your disposition as a teacher and kind of like showed you different ways you can contribute to your community and help teachers in your community. So you mentioned something about finishing your master's recently. What did you do your master's in?
I completed my master's in early childhood and elementary education. I finished my teacher certification as well as my master's from the College of New Jersey. And again, that was a blessing from COVID. I was able to really finish it in within a year, and it has really helped me greatly to kind of almost kind of like personally develop in becoming someone who's able to adapt with the sudden changes that are happening and transitioning from something that is a bit traditional to something that is a bit fast-paced, trying to minimize the gap between the students and the teachers. Because there's this one statement that one of the professors told me, and it's my motto with EdTech in general, it's that we're trying to minimize the gap between our digital natives, who are the kids growing up in a very digital world, and us, the digital immigrants, because technology joined us. We didn't join
Love
technology.
And that's
really the key. I sit in a class and all the kids are talking to me about are like these games and these applications, and it's all about sitting in front of a screen for hours, and that's their drive. So how can I bring education in that to get that sense of excitement from them to be able to have my content teachable to them? You know what I mean?
Yes, definitely. So,
yeah.
Great. Okay, Dina, that's great. And you mentioned something about working in an international school in Cairo, right?
Yeah.
So do you want to elaborate more maybe and give us some background about like the different school models in Egypt and how the K-12 education system in Egypt is structured?
Yes, absolutely. I would love to do that. So Egypt is structured, the educational system in Egypt, I like to call it, it's like a fruit salad. There's so many ingredients in the education where an Egyptian student graduating from school isn't going out of a, you know, I want to say like a mold, right? Like all the Egyptian students are going to look like that. This is the 21st Egyptian student citizen walking or roaming around the world. No, we have different programs. We have, first of all, we have the public sector and we have the private sector, which is the international schools mostly. The public sector is exactly the same across the board in all governorates in Egypt. However, the private is divided into schools where the first taught language, where the first language is different. So for example, we have a lot of American international schools, we have a lot of British international schools, we have French schools, and we have German schools. So in all of these international schools, all the subjects are taught in that first language. So the American and British in English, the lycée Français is in French, and then the German is, so the students take math and science and German and
subjects. Yes,
all the Arabic subjects, exactly. And then you have Arabic being something that is common as a second language. I can't say that. However, it is a given that all the students are abiding by the ministry's curricula across the board as well from K-12. And then they take a third language. So our students really are, I sometimes sympathize with them, because this language that they're supposed to learn all the subject areas in is technically a second language. They're not natives to it. Yet we have, and we set very high expectations of them. And we can get to that a little later in our conversation. But we're overloading these kids, right? Like, we have parents who are complaining, like, why is my kid not reading at grade level and isn't scoring the top blah, 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 meeting the MAP results and the MAP tests and the STARS assessment? And to me, as an educator, I'm like, your son or your daughter is dealing with so much already. Like, they're graduating from college, from school, learning two language and expected to talk, speak two language fluently, alongside with learning basic skills for a third language, alongside with the content of math and science and social studies, you know?
It's amazing.
It can be overwhelming. And to be honest, even though parents complain, when I see the kids that I had in fourth grade or third grade as graduating students, and I look at them as a 21st century citizen, I'm really proud of those kids. They've gone through so much and they have so many skills, to be honest, in comparison to many kids around the world. But it depends on how we can showcase the skills and the talents and the qualifications in a specific way where the kid might not speak the language fluently, but the knowledge that they know using this language is priceless. You know what I mean?
Of course, yeah. It's amazing. It's amazing how, you know, this is one thing that I always think about, like how many kids around the world are actually not only bilingual, but they're also like multilingual. And it's just, in other parts of the world, the idea of just learning a second language is not there. And it's just amazing how, you know, certain countries would be viewed as not very, I would say, developed, yet students graduate from these countries knowing like more than two languages and are able to communicate and are able to work in an environment that totally uses a foreign language. It's just amazing.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And all the students, to be honest, in Egypt, many Egyptian students graduating from international schools have been seeking a bachelor's degree from Western countries, I'm sorry. And when I hear their stories about their professors telling them like, oh my God, you're so fluent. It's like as if you're unveiling this facade of like, oh my God, you're a Middle Eastern who can speak all these languages and you have all this knowledge. Yes, because we do invest so much energy. And I understand that many people would not agree with what I'm saying, that we have a very decent education. Yes, we would love to have more resources in our schools and expose our kids to so much more and equip our classrooms with, you know, all the resources that are available, a reading corner, a computer, a small section for computer work and all that. But still, our students graduate with so much knowledge that is almost like not to be, you know, I don't know. It's they're setting the bar so high. And people won't know unless you hire them, unless you speak to them. You know what I mean?
I can totally relate to that. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. I have seen it. I have experienced it as a student myself. And I'm sure you had that experience growing up as well. Absolutely. And then coming to the States. So Dina, so you spoke about like the different school models. And now I understand that the kind of like professional development and training that is provided to teachers in Egypt would be different, maybe based on the different schools that they're working in.
Yeah.
So do you want to tell us a little bit more about like teacher preparation? What goes into teacher preparation before teachers are hired, and then in-service training? Like what kind of professional development do teachers receive in Egypt after working in a school? And how is that different from one school model to another?
Okay, well, it depends on the school, to be honest. Especially, I'm going to talk about my own experience being in two international schools. It all comes down to the school's vision, right? If they want to invest in their teachers, if they want to train their teachers, if they understand that the idea, once they have well-trained teachers, it's given back to the students, and it's almost like feeding back everybody around this environment. There isn't necessarily a very specific pathway to how international schools do their teachers training, teachers or professional development organizations or companies that walk into schools. However, I have seen recently a couple of organizations that are founded by educators, doctors, actually PhD one students and doctors like yourself who started their own developmental workshop and program. And it's pretty much the school walks up to them and tells them, can you please show me your programs that you provide to educators? What kind of development training do you do? And it's mostly where the person comes into schools and give all the staff a PD session. Sometimes it's based on a certification where I can say this place has certified me that I've done so and so, but there isn't like one uniform way where you can go to the ministry and the ministry can give you accreditation for an international school. However, recently, the Ministry of Education in Egypt has been requiring a basic teacher's skills certification before you go work at a school. But okay. It's according to my knowledge, it's mostly for governmental schools, not international schools, because for international schools to teach, you have to be a certified educator. And that's a different issue, where to me, it's not easy, because as an Egyptian teacher, or as just being an Egyptian citizen, the only place that provides teacher certification is the American University in Cairo. And the American University in Cairo can be quite costly to get a teacher certification and actually it's more of a diploma. It's not necessarily a teacher qualification certification, like if you were to want to teach in California or New Jersey or New York or any of that, you're supposed to take the state's certification and qualification. No, this is more of an early childhood, basic literacy, foundational skills for the educator. And it doesn't necessarily mean that the international schools are going to accept this diploma. It increases your chances, but it's not what they're aiming for. So for an Egyptian educator to want to teach at those international schools, you have to take really the extra mile of enrolling yourself in a foreign international school to be able to get your master's or teacher qualification. And two very popular certifications that are going around in Egypt right now, it's the PCGE, the British one, or like the European based one actually. And then mostly we're dependent on, I've heard TCNJ, I've heard ACACIA, something that is, I think it's like the American Institute for Education, but everything is like extremely overpriced. Like you, as an educator, you try to enroll and get admitted and learn all about it, but at the end of the day, it doesn't pay off, you know, what you've spent. So there are so many restrictions to make you as an educator feel secured about your career, really, to kind of keep on going. And, you know, it's
do schools like offer any kind of like financial assistance?
Yes, they do. It depends though, but you aren't guaranteed. Like, I mean, it kind of have to do with like you signing up, saying I want to enroll in this. And it's usually based on the idea of like, okay, if we fund you, then we need to guarantee that you're going to stay with us for an X amount of years until it's kind of like a payback, but that's totally fair. But it doesn't mean that if we have a staff of like, 400 educators, they would do that with only four, but I assume so many more than four would want to go through that. You know what I mean? But you can't depend on that. That's what I'm trying to say, really.
Yeah, that's definitely something very challenging for a lot of teachers. I don't think it's only related to Egypt. I think it's like teachers in so many different countries around the world where this kind of licensing and certification is not provided by local universities, and you have to go and get it from somewhere else, and it's just very costly. So, Dina, what happens to public school teachers? Do they have to go through like the School of Education and public universities to be able to work in public schools? How does that work?
To be honest, what has been going around the past 2 to 3 years is that before you are a higher teacher, because here's the deal, the first school that I used to work at, some sort of a nonprofit international school, but it still has to abide by the government's ruling and everything. It's unlike the school that I work at now. Okay, the one that I work at now is 100% international, privately owned, and so on and so forth. So when I was hired in 2011, I didn't need to go through any certification that has to be done through the Ministry of Education. 3 years ago, the ministry had declared that every person wanting to become a teacher and teaching at a government-based school, you have to go through a training session with the ministry. And the ministry provides it from one of the public universities. And to my knowledge, it's Ain Shams, and it is in Cairo, and it does the training for you. And then once you're done, you get a license, and then you can be hired in any of it. It's like your certification slash qualification that you can walk into all the public schools or government affiliated schools to be able to be hired there.
Okay, so it's more straightforward than having to go internationally and seek certification and license.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Great. So Dina, let's talk now about, as an educator who's been working as a teacher in Egypt for 9 years and two different schools, and like all this background that you have, like working with different groups of students and different parts of the city, what are some challenges facing K-12 education in Egypt? So we're focusing more on like this, the focus of this episode of Universal Narratives podcast is educational development all over the world. So let's focus a little bit on the challenges facing K-12 education in Egypt. What are some of these challenges from your point of view as an educator?
Well, there are a few things, to be honest. First thing, I kind of touched based on it at the beginning of our conversation, which is expectations. We set very high expectations of the kids having to adopt a second language and speak it fluently. The kids are working under so much stress, and then they're not able, not all students are able to meet these objectives that we set. And then it turns into some sort of a social emotional issue with the kids and their parents at home, that the kid is not doing a fantastic job and so on and so forth, when at the end of the day, they're dealing with a second language, not their tongue native language. So this is one thing that I personally would like to raise awareness to, that our students are doing a wonderful job if we're expected to have a student at an international school or even at a public school speaking two languages fluently, then I shouldn't adopt a foreign curricula that is only done for a student who speaks one language, a student who takes all the subject areas in one language. So if I'm going to have the same expectations, I can't use the same content. I can't use the same model. I can't use the same hours. I need to change my curricula so that it's really, it caters to this student's abilities and changes in culture. Like, the curriculum needs to be multicultural, you know? So it is something that is measurable and achievable, but I feel like we set the bar so high, and it's a rebuttal between the pair. It's just an issue where everybody's very constantly frustrated that the objectives are not met. So that's the first thing. The second thing is we face a major issue with our language, Arabic. Arabic is a very sophisticated language. And unfortunately, students are losing the essence of Arabic altogether, in terms of, we don't take pride in using our language. We don't take pride in reading and talk. I'm not saying talking formally, but in using the language, in reading in Arabic, in having deep conversations in Arabic, we kind of, I don't know, it's as if it's like we're trying to disengage from who we truly are. And that is also another issue that is very reflective on education, because when I have students who would want to intentionally speak in English just to feel like they're westernized, they're pretty much giving away who they truly are. And there's nothing wrong with who they really are. They need to carry it very proudly around the world, right? This is the only way we're going to develop and show our true colors. So in international schools, again, because the kids are learning so much in a different language, having very high expectations, the students I can't really blame the students. The educational system is not tailored in a way where the students are really utilizing the Arabic language in a way like they are learning English, French, and German. So we have students also who graduate from international schools, but their Arabic is extremely underdeveloped, where the kid can speak fluently in English, write fluently, the kid does everything, but when it comes to Arabic, it's nothing. And to me, that's not correct. Something needs to happen about this. And trust me, I'm saying it's not correct, but I don't have the solution to it, because it's such a big undertaking. It's
just overall, as you said, I totally agree. Like, you know, you lose part of who you are. It's your identity. And unfortunately, sometimes when you're using models from different countries to educate students, you instill these ideas that, you know, these models come from people who are more superior. So yeah. I'm trying to find a nice way to say it, but kids kind of like develop this feeling that they're inadequate and they're not, you know, they're not good the way they are. They have to like be like that model, be like the people who belong to that model to be able to fit in and be viewed as educated. And it's just, you know, there is nothing wrong with developing both languages at the same time. And I feel like there has to be like a character education kind of curriculum that mm-hmm. focuses on a person's identity and language, and it has to be like, it has to go hand in hand with, you know, what is being done at school. So there's nothing wrong with using the models, but you have to also be proud of who you are.
Exactly.
And you can be both. You're an example of being both. I am an example of being both. We got educated internationally. We also lived in, you know, Arab speaking countries, and we can speak Arabic fluently. And we're proud of who we are. Like, you can easily be both. And it's just that you have to kind of like instill these feelings and these, I don't know what to call them, but like students have to like really be proud of who they are. And it just needs a lot of work on our part as educators, I think.
I totally agree, especially that this is what makes the kids special when they travel around the world, and when they write the I'm a bilingual you know, person, like employee, like, hire me, I can speak both languages fluently. Well, you need to make sure that your native language is spoken and utilized within context properly, you know what I mean? So it's a very deep issue that everybody's complaining from, but we're trying to work around it, really. So yeah, another thing, my list is a bit kind of lengthy, but I'm just going to try to go through things a bit quicker, is the homeschool communication. And this kind of relates to a point that I wrote later on my list, which is how teaching as an occupation is somewhat stigmatized, as it's the job that people just like start working on, or, you know, just getting if they don't have anything else to do. It has some sort of a gender issue to it. Only moms, newlyweds, become teachers because you finish at 3 and then there's nothing else for you to do. So it fits your schedule as a female perfectly. And to me, this is a major issue, because how is this connected to just like our society working? So here's the deal. You have, and I don't want to sound like I'm, you know, I'm throwing strong like claims, but personally, I've been a victim of this. I'm someone who graduated from the States, from one of the top universities in the States, almost that close to being an Olympian and doing all that. And then I remember my friends and everyone around me is like, why teaching? You can do so much better. And I was like, what? That is offensive. That is offensive. Actually, what I am doing is the most rewarding job, and it's priceless, right? So bear with me with that point. And as I've said, it's a gender-related occupation and so on. So how is that related to homeschool communication? Unfortunately, especially in international schools, since parents spend a lot of money, you know, on their students' education, there is this unspoken of feeling that parents own the teachers. Like, it's like, you do what I say, right? Mm-hmm. I am the parent. I know everything. How dare you not to respond to my email when I've sent it and you didn't respond within the first 3 minutes? Why did you tell my kid to do this and do that? And it comes to a point where it's like, what rights do I have as a teacher? Like, I wish there is a campaign around Egypt that actually protects teachers' rights, that really elevates a teacher's roles. I know that there are some Western countries where teachers are like highly paid. We don't have that in Egypt. And how is this related to homeschool communication? Is that when a teacher communicates with a parent, or just the idea of elevating, elevating, but kind of leveraging on being a united unit between the parent and the teacher to do what's best for the student, it turns out always that the teacher is the bad guy, just because she or he wants to change a bit about what's happening. And it's not changing it because the student is good, is bad, or any of that. No, it's because you have certified educators who could sometimes see that there is an issue that is happening in the structure at home. And perhaps you're just kind of throwing ideas at the parents. Sometimes the parents don't really understand that we're there to help and to provide them with advice for their students, excuse me, for their kids' well-being. So the idea of how we look at teachers, to be honest, needs to change dramatically. It has been developing just a tad bit, but there's so much room for growth, to be honest. And this kind of goes into the third point of part of the issue in education in Egypt, especially in the public sector. Most of the teachers depend on tutoring because they're underpaid in the public sector. There isn't like a decent minimum wage that is given to educators who are teaching generations and generations of students for them to be able to sustain a good life to provide to their family without having to resort to tutoring. So what ends up happening is that a teacher's private center that gives them way more money than they would do at school. So education doesn't happen at schools. It happens at tutoring centers. And it's illegal tutor centers because it's not like the tutors pay taxes or anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we need to find a way to systemize the education system. Just either, I don't know, like increase the salaries, make sure that the teachers are being dealt with like important and valuable members of the society, because that's not always the case. And unfortunately, in international schools as well, expats get paid triple what Egyptians would pay, regardless of the qualifications and regardless of what Egyptian teachers bring to the table. You're just a non whatever country. You are an Egyptian teacher, so you're automatically less qualified. You're automatically less of whatever. And it's, you know, like the teachers are just like wishing that things could get a bit better so that we can give back. You know, you reach a point, it's a humanitarian job, 100%. But if you're going to keep pushing to give all that you can give, you need to get some as well at some point throughout your journey of teaching.
Totally.
So yeah. And one major thing is lack of inclusion. That's a big issue. Major issue. And when I mean inclusion, I mean that every student, every child is included in a classroom. That is a non-existent issue. Like it's extremely underdeveloped in a way that is extremely sad. Mm. You can have learning support departments at schools, but that does not provide, that does not give any room for students on the spectrum to be part of a wholesome classroom. I can sense it even on the streets as a person, not as an educator, where students or people who could seem different are still seen as outliers, are still seen as people who shouldn't fit in the society. If we don't start with education or educating our generations as young as they come, it's going to take so much more time to, you know, to move on. Just like the other day, I'm going to mention a very quick thing. I saw a post on Facebook where someone was making fun of an ATM machine that was built by an ex bank, a very popular bank in Egypt, where the ATM buttons and everything was at a child's eye level. And the comments that were made on the social platform was like, ha ha, is this made for kids and cats? And then someone responds, no, it's made for people on wheelchairs. Where is inclusion? Where is UDL, the universal design of learning? So the architecture and everybody's included. So this is how sad it is. And I am telling you, this is happening just a week ago.
Hmm.
So people aren't educated or aren't aware to understand that everyone has the right to live and to learn and to feel wholesome, right?
Yes, definitely. But you see, lots of these points that you're bringing up really need, I would say, solutions from like the top level. Like, absolutely. You know, you need a lot of resources, you need a lot of funding, you need a lot of systems in place in order to like regulate everything. How teachers are being prepared, are teachers that are being prepared to work with students with any kind of like, I would say, disabilities or special needs. even gifted children, any child who needs like just extra support, extra help, extra resources, are teachers being paid fairly? All of these issues, like, you know, I struggled with when I lived in Egypt a little bit, because I worked in an international school too, and I was able to see the disparities. And it's just very sad. But I'm very happy to see that there is some kind of like a level of awareness that is spreading around, and more teachers like yourself are speaking more about that, which is in itself a step towards making changes in the future. So Dina, I think you already said that, but like, so you said you don't have solutions for everything, but do you see any of the issues or the challenges that you just discussed being addressed? And if so, how are they being addressed?
How would they be addressed?
Are they being addressed right now? Is anybody are they addressing? Being
To be honest, there are a few things that are being addressed, but my main thing that is we're starting to address it, obviously, is inclusion, but that's a very long way. Like, you know, it's I don't know how to like start it, but people can do something about it, because some major companies, some sort of the corporate social responsibility people can start developing units in schools that are tailored to train teachers to adopt a more inclusive learning environment in their classrooms, to make sure that everyone is included there. You know, if there is a will, there is a way. We just need to have the people who have the money have the will. However, there have been a lot of NGOs that are starting to raise awareness to what is visual impairedness, and how can we make sure that students with visually impaired, how can they take part of our society? And it needs to, as you said, it needs to start from a top down approach, because from a bottom up, the bottom needs to be aware, the bottom needs to be educated, and this is not happening, or it's going to take forever until we reach that part. How can it be done? I personally think that the ministry, people who are in control, have to come up with some basic rules that every student has the right to learn, that every school, regardless of it being a public or an international school, has to have a percentage of students who are on the neurodiverse, on the spectrum, being part of the educational system. You have to put rules, because here's the deal. If we were to look at COVID, no one thought we would be able to adapt that quickly to the sudden changes that happened. It's just like everything else. If you set a rule that every school has to be inclusive, then the teachers and the schools are going to train their teachers. And as of a year, you're going to have I don't want to call it a special needs unit, because to me, a special needs unit, it's still not inclusion. If the students are still in a classroom outside of the regular tier one classroom, right? Mm-hmm. So the government needs to do something about this. Obviously, there has to be a lot of campaigns on the TV, on Facebook, all the social platforms, Instagram, and all that, to really educate everybody, from the youngsters in specific, of how to deal with everyone equally, regardless of the physical appearance, because sometimes being different is totally internal, it's not external. So that's it. In terms of the idea of how to make teachers more aware, we need to have a stronger and more of some sort of an annual convention where teachers from all over Egypt, and it has to be some sort of something that is for free or that is affordable, where teachers can go to seek knowledge. We don't have to make everything that is to be wanted. We don't have to make it extremely expensive, where people are obviously, they're not going to go for it. If to be a certified is going to cost me $20,000, how many people are going to do that? And then we're saying, well, the teacher didn't do this and didn't do that. He or she are not, they don't have that financial ability to be able to educate themselves. So there has to be some sort of a PD that is, I don't know. I know that the channel, okay, to give the ministry its rights, the Egyptian Knowledge Bank. I've logged on and I've been logging on it. And this is such a wonderful resource that the ministry has done, where it has compiled endless amounts of resources that is accessible by every single Egyptian with a national ID. We still need to train the teachers and need to train everyone to log on to learn how to utilize the content. Yeah. So we need to work on training and teaching people how to use the resources, even if they're minimal, before we go buy endless amounts of resources, but still people don't know how to use it. Mm-hmm. So I think those two parts, teacher training and inclusion, if we can just start with those two, on the long run, our education system is going to be more wholesome than what is it is. It's, I personally think it's good. It just needs some tweaking to make things change a bit. But yeah.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of students just need differentiation, and just differentiating how you're teaching in the classroom might accommodate more learners. And this is what we want to train teachers to do. Not because the student is learning differently, it means that the student cannot learn. It just means that they need to learn differently. And it's you as a teacher who can, you know, craft everything and create everything in such a way to accommodate them and cater for their needs. So this is an area that also a lot of teachers need to be aware of and hopefully receive training on at some point. So according to what you said, Dina, it seems like the most pressing issue that you see right now is inclusion. And you're hoping that this would be addressed through first training teachers and also spreading awareness so that the society as a whole sees the need for including students and creating spaces that accommodate everyone, regardless of their, you know, learning needs and learning levels, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So Dina, you know, you spoke a little bit in the beginning about how the pandemic kind of like impacted the way that you see yourself as a teacher and your role as a teacher and, you know, new channels or new ways that you want to give back to the teaching community in Egypt. How would you describe your contribution in terms of developing the quality of education in your school right now? What is your role in maybe developing the quality of teaching and learning, educating other teachers in your school? And I think you also mentioned that you have like a Facebook page where you're also targeting teachers in Egypt as a whole and not only in one specific location. So do you want to elaborate more on that?
Yeah, absolutely. And moving from one school to the other, I've noticed a common thing, which is the difficulty of a teacher changing his or her ways of doing things, the way they approach the curriculum, the way they approach technology in general. There's this kind of block that kind of inhibits them from trying new things. So what I'm really trying to do is trying to raise awareness to the idea that technology is created to facilitate one's job. It is not to make their job more time consuming. It is not to make it tedious. So if you're using an application that is making you work more and not working smarter, working harder, then you're probably using the wrong application or you are doing it wrong. So my job is to try to narrow down the gap between what my school has as objectives that are standard-based, that all teachers need to meet these set of standards and teach these to the students within a certain amount of time. How can we utilize technology? How can we use different platforms to reach these goals without overwhelming the teachers and increasing the engagement levels and the motivation levels by our students? And not only in English spoken subjects, but also in Arabic spoken subjects. And this is exactly what I've been trying to work with with our Arabic department, is that I can totally see my students, and I've seen it and I've heard it. Arabic is so boring. We don't like to sit in the Arabic lesson. There's nothing fun to do. And the students are expected to memorize and not develop like or utilize their higher order thinking skills. There isn't gamification that is provided that would enhance learning, that would just kind of elevate learning and engage students a little bit more. So my job is to walk in and educate all educators about the different systems and technology, about learning management systems, how to communicate with the students better, how to communicate with the parents, how to make the parents more involved in their children's learning, and to give them an idea of what is happening in the classroom. Because some parents are disengaged, and to be honest, the more they know, the better it is going to be for their kids to understand, to take an active part in their children's journey in school. And then to inform teachers of the audience response systems that are there. How can students, without the use of, there are like really cool, Plickers, for example, it's an audience response system tool where teacher can get immediate feedback and immediate responses without the kids having a device. So these little resources where I walk in and I tell the teachers, by the way, there's a free resource that you could be using that could save you endless amounts of time. So with that additional time that you have, that you now have, you can customize your teaching a bit more so it is differentiated, so you're reaching more kids. So it's just a matter of like putting the puzzle pieces together so a teacher can feel more in control of their teaching in terms of the resources that they are utilizing, their management skills in the classroom and outside of their classroom. Because sometimes teachers can say, my classroom is so loud. It's not only about the content. No, it's about you as a teacher. How are you functioning in school? How are you functioning outside of school? So the group that I've created on Facebook, it's pretty much some sort of a forum where anyone can ask any questions. I do post tutorials in English and in Arabic to make sure that I'm reaching everyone. And also it's opened up because at the end of the day, no one has it all. No one knows all the information for everything. So if Dr. Salma has a question, she could ask it and Dina can answer it. Dina doesn't have to be like the founder of the group or anything. So it's more of a indirect professional development that is ongoing, and it's for free. That's the sole purpose. I don't want anyone to pay extra money to learn about something. So yeah, that's pretty much it.
That's amazing, Dina. My last question is a question that I ask everyone who I interview for this podcast, which is, what can educators all over the world learn from your experience as an Egyptian educator? What is something that we can take away? What is one thing that we can reflect on as global educators about the quality of education in Egypt, what's happening in Egypt, so that it would inform our own practices as educators worldwide?
That's a very, I need to prepare myself for that
question. I love that question.
Oh my goodness, curveball. Okay, to be honest, something totally not related to technology, our students are very fragile. We have fragile souls in our classroom walking in every day. As a teacher, I walk in into the classroom thinking that I've got it all and I have all the answers. And sometimes we assume this character to the students that we are the source of everything, to a point where we showcase a very perfectionist form of a human being, which you and I know is not true, right? So it's almost like we're misleading our students about what is right and what is wrong. So one thing that I would give everyone is show your insecurities to your students, because you're human at the end of the day. And to show the students that it is okay to be vulnerable, it is okay to talk about your feelings, it is okay to show that you need help sometimes. This is how we develop as human beings, is when we receive help. Because when I receive help means I've learned something new. And if everyone just switched their way of thinking to being open to new things, to new knowledge, including us as educators, where I stand in the middle of the classroom and I say, yes, I am wrong. I'm going to look something up. Sometimes I have questions that are thrown at me. And to be honest, I don't know the answer to. It is okay not to know. You don't always have to know. And it is okay to tell the students that it's okay not to always know every single thing around. So it's the idea of working on the student's self-esteem to make them feel comfortable in their own skin that really matters at the end of the day, because this is what they're truly going to take away from their school years, more than the vocab word or the math equation or the science experiment or any of that. That's the keys. These are the keys that are going to help them survive life, because life could be challenging, or it is actually very challenging. So yeah, I mean, that's, to be honest, that's what I've learned over the past couple of years. And I keep reminding myself of that, that we're not perfect. We're human beings, and to learn is to keep developing. So yeah, that's
it. That was very inspiring. Thank you so much for all of this, all of these tools and suggestions and, all these ideas that you shared with us today. I think it was very informative. And is there any way you would like, if anybody would like to connect with you, maybe for, a conversation in the future, or contributing to the platforms that you started, how would they do that?
I have a Facebook page that I've just launched. It's not like very busy yet, but I'm working on it. It's called Dina's Toolbox. Also, the website, the link for the Facebook group is called Education Technology, and with an Egyptian flag. I know that the name is very straightforward, but I needed it to be as straightforward as possible, so any Egyptian searching for what they want, it would pop up. And anyone can reach out to me on Instagram on Dina's Toolbox as well. It's going to directly get like a direct message. I would be more than happy to help out. And if there is a way that Selma, I can give you the email to pass it on, or send it in the podcast.
I can definitely include it in the bio on the podcast page, so that whoever is interested in contacting you would be able to do so, because I think you have such great ideas that anybody would find very useful, and a lot of teachers would like to connect with you.
Thank you. It would be my pleasure. I would love to hear from people all over the world and be of any help if I can. Thank you so much, Sam, for having me.
Thank you so much, Dina.
Pleasure. Thank you.
I look forward to speaking again.
Likewise. All right.